One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai. Kosai.org.
If you like pina colada,
turn it a little bit more.
What?
Turn the knob a little bit more, dude.
Are you really seriously still messing with that?
Yeah, dude, I can't take it. I swear I hear something different.
Does this sound better?
A little, yeah. A little.
You know, you really wanted me to increase the bass, and then I did that, and then you said you didn't.
I know, right?
You didn't like the bass.
No, dude, I'm sorry.
All right, how's that?
All right, right. Good. That'll work. We're going to have to go with it.
Sounds good. Are you prepared?
Yes, I'm ready to rumble.
Let's do this then. All right, let's start the show.
Here we go. Everybody, and thanks for joining us here again on Expanded Perspectives with me, Cam Hale, joining me as always today, Mr. Kyle Filio Filson.
How's it going, everybody? I hope everybody's doing good out there.
We have got a treat today, at least for us, it's a treat. We always say that and always think it's kind of a dumb thing to say, but dude, we had a great time.
Everything you say is pretty much a dumb thing to say.
Anything that I say,
right?
Anything that I say, any and everything I say, folks, is a dumb thing. Trust me. If you don't believe me, ask my wife. We are going to have some crypto stuff. We are going to jump into a little New Zealand crypto. But before we do that, me and Kyle was talking about some crazy news stories.
Yeah, let's get into some news. Did you see this over here at the BBC News that NASA has started their year-long isolation?
I saw that.
Simulate life on Mars.
How do you think that's going to go?
I don't know, man. It's not something I would want to do. It says a team from NASA has been, they got a group of recruits and they began living in a dome near a barren volcano in Hawaii to simulate what life would be like on Mars. Now, this isolation experience, which will last for 1 year starting on this last Friday, will be the longest of its type ever attempted. Now, experts estimate that a human mission to the Red Planet could take between 1 and 3 years. And this six-strong team will live in close quarters under that dome, without fresh air, fresh food, or without privacy. They clothed themselves away at 3 p.m. local time on Friday, and any journey outside of the dome, they say, the dome is 36 foot tall and about 20 foot in diameter. They say any journey outside of that dome will require a spacesuit, so they have to pretend like they're on Mars and to see how it goes. Let's listen to this clip.
Touchdown confirmed. We're safe on Mars.
This is how the NASA team celebrated when they landed a rover robot on Mars. It has informed scientists about the terrain and what it might be like to live there. But a mission to the Red Planet would take far longer than the usual 6 months spent at a space station. And that's where this next experiment comes in. Six crew will live together in a dome on a volcano in Hawaii. It is the longest isolation test NASA has ever attempted. No fresh air, no fresh food, no privacy for a year. If they want to go outside, they'll have to do it in a spacesuit. They'll live in the likes of canned tuna and powdered cheese. The volunteers come from France, Germany and America. The men and women will have their own sleeping space and even a desk, but there's bound to be conflict. And how they deal with it, how they resolve their differences, could help determine whether or not humans eventually make it to Mars. Laura Bicker, BBC News, Washington.
So there you go. Says the men and women will each have a small sleeping cot and a desk inside their rooms, and provisions will include powdered cheese, canned tuna, and other things. It says missions to the International Space Station last 6 months, and the U.S. Space Agency has recently conducted 4-month and an 8-month long isolation experiment, but this will be the longest one so far. And they said that they're interested in seeing how humans deal with being closed in such close proximities without the ability to leave for such a long time.
I can tell you how it's going to end with mass murder. You never hear what's happened to those other people.
Right? Man, that's...
You know what I mean? Whatever happened to me? What's the outcome? The people that, the 8-month people, they go crazy?
Well, I don't know. You know, either that's right. You're either going to end up being really close friends or you're going to end up hating each other. That's the only two possible scenarios. Have you seen the new previews for the new Martian movie
with Matt Damon,
yeah. Right? That looks awesome.
I think that was a book.
Oh, was it?
I think it was a book. I
hope I'm not getting duped because the commercial, the trailer looks really awesome.
I want to see it.
But you know how many
bad.
Times do you see the trailer and that's like the best part?
Mad Max.
I haven't seen that.
Don't waste
but you
your time.
Told me it was terrible.
Don't waste your time. It's horrible.
When they remake these movies that are really good, it's like, why? Like, what was the one you were just texting me today about? It's a remake.
The Vacation. Well, it's not really. It's a playoff of, but it's the new Vacation.
Oh, it's not a remake?
No. I'm not into those
What's
kind of
What's wrong with
movies.
Chevy Chase?
He's in it. For a little while.
Yeah, but it's not the same
it's
as the real
same.
One.
It's just, you're
Come on,
exactly
man. Wally
right.
World?
You're exactly. And that's where they're going in this one.
Yeah.
It's not a real one. I don't know. And my other question is, too, why do they got to put it in Hawaii? Why can't they put it in some place that's not pretty?
Well, no, they're living on the edge of a volcano, so I think they're trying to simulate, like, nasty,
what it would look
terrible
like.
Land.
Surely
yeah.
There's not windows, too, where you can just look out and see the daylight. And all. You probably
It doesn't get into that.
I wonder. You know what I mean? Because it'd be one of those deals. How messed up would it be if you didn't know what time it was?
Yeah, they know that's an interesting question, though, that you bring that up. Do they have to have, like, a special type of lighting in there to simulate vitamin D?
I would think so.
Because I'm imagining if you don't go outside for a whole year, I mean, that could probably be really, really bad for you, right?
Yeah, health-wise, it would probably be really, really bad
I guess
for
you could
you.
Always take supplements.
I got something strange here, Kyle, and we've talked about it and touched on it, and we touched on it and did a segment on it when it actually happened, but there's more weirdness. This comes from Gizmodo. Miss Maddie Stone writes about this, and it says, the case of MH370 wing segment keeps getting weirder. And I could not agree more with that whole idea. When we first talked about this, we were like, well, you know, where the heck did this come from? What the heck, you know, people were saying, oh, this isn't real. You know, this isn't the MH actual
about when
flight.
And then they supposedly found a part of the wing just like last month.
Exactly. This is what it is. This is when a wing section of the Boeing 777 washed up the Indian Ocean island of La Reunion last month, the Malaysian government quickly ascribed the part to missing Malaysian Airline 370.
Right.
There's been some ongoing investigation has failed to verify this.
So it's not true.
Well, this is where it gets a little bit strange. The Boeing engineers confirm that the wing segment belongs to a 777, an MH370 that went missing March of 2014,
mm-hmm.
is the only unaccounted for 777. So you're like, that's it.
What else could it be?
It's over. And that's what it even says in the article. Case closed. The Malaysian prime minister, he figured that it was, Razak. And he said, you know, on the August 5th, he released a statement pretty much telling everybody, it's closed. That's it. It's in the ocean.
What's
crashed.
His name? Razak?
Nahib Razak.
Sounds like a superhero
Minutes,
or right? something, right?
Exactly. Minutes later, it says here that a French investigator countered the prime minister's remarks, saying that more tests were needed to conclusively determine the wing segment's origins. And it says those test results were supposed to come within a day, then it became a few days, and now it's been several weeks. And here's the hang-up. Now, this comes from New York Magazine. It says the ID plate that should have been attached to the inboard edge of the flapron is missing. So this plate is affixed to all 777 flaprons, and it ought to contain a serial number linking the part to the MH370. So they said, well, it's pretty much put the brakes on everything. It's not there, so they can't guarantee that's what it was.
But what else could it be? I mean, how many missing 777 wings are there floating around in the ocean, right?
Exactly. But there's something else that's a little strange. This part of the wing is covered in barnacles everywhere.
So it has to be in the water for a long time.
Well, and it says that it would suggest that the wing segment has spent the last several months suspended, of course, beneath the ocean surface, But how? And this is actually written in there. It says, while it's easy to imagine a submarine or scuba diver hovering peacefully 10 or 20 feet below the surface of the water, this is not something that inanimate objects are capable of doing on their own. Either they are more buoyant than water, in which case they float, or they're less buoyant in water, in which case they sink. So how could a 6-foot-long chunk of airplane remain suspended beneath the ocean surface for a long period of time? And at this point, there aren't any simple, common-sense answers. The range of possible explanations at this point runs from as yet unidentified natural process to purposeful intervention by conspirators.
Really? Well, could it be attached to the airplane 10 to 20 foot under the water and then through natural waves or something that it eventually broke off?
I'm sure it could be.
Or it's an example of a parallel universe. And this plane went back in time and has been under the water for a couple hundred years or something, right?
I'm sure it could be. But what you're talking about, when it's if it's buoyant, why is all of a sudden this part floating? If the wings are that buoyant, why wasn't the whole thing floating?
It was hung, it's attached to the airplane underwater, and when it broke off, that's when it began to float. You know what I'm saying?
I know exactly what you're saying, but what I'm saying is if there's two wings that are that large, why wouldn't that be, it would turn to float up? It's hard to suspend something perfect. A whole plane, 10 or 20 foot underwater, you're going to see the plane.
Yeah.
Or the wing is going to break it. If it's that, the whole wing would be more buoyant than that part of the wing.
I have no
clue. Yeah, I mean, that's what makes it so crazy.
It is.
Is where does it come from? And what just so happens that there's no plate on it to link it to there. This is, it just gets wackier. It keeps getting wackier.
That's crazy. Did you see this from the Cryptozoology News? A man was chased by aliens on a Nevada road.
Uh-oh.
This comes from Wells, Nevada. It says a motorist claims that he was chased by a group of gray aliens, that he later found them dancing underneath the streetlights of a Nevada town in Elko County.
But you can't party? You can't party in Nevada?
I guess not. Is it? Well, yeah. Right?
Why is he hating on them dancing under the streetlights?
Of course you could party. It's Las Vegas, man. Right? Right? It says the anonymous man. That's what worries me about the story. The anonymous man on Friday said that he was traveling from Idaho to Wells, Nevada, when he noticed a strange light behind his vehicle. He said it was around 2 a.m. and I was by myself in my truck with my dog. He reported this to the Mutual UFO Network. He said my dog began growling and I saw a small light coming from behind me. And I wondered, what is this motorcycle doing out here in the middle of the night? There was no noise. He said when I looked back, he recalled, the unidentified light disappeared, coming back a few moments later. It did this several times. And the more I looked at it, when it was far behind the truck, the faster it came right behind my truck. Now, the eyewitness said that he felt very scared at this point because he knew that this was something unnatural, adding that the chase lasted for several hours. He tried to take shelter behind a truck driver. He says as he reached Wells, he stopped at a casino to use the restroom. That's when he says he spotted five creatures under a street lamp. He said they were skinny grays with big heads. They were dancing in the light. I rubbed my eyes and thought I had lost my mind. But when I looked again, they were still there. Now, the man claims that even though he revealed the UFO sighting to his family, he never felt comfortable enough to let them know about the little people until this last year. He said, I saw orbs on Ancient Aliens and those little people that other people have seen. Now, reports of strange lights and orbs referred to as undines by paranormal investigators are becoming more frequent, they say, as the majority of the population is now able to carry a camera in their pockets because of the invention of the smartphone. Mm-hmm. There's simply more people walking around with cameras. And he said that the sightings of these orbs has gone up. Now, he, of course, didn't have a video or a photograph of his sighting, but he claims that, you know, he claims that this was real. And he says, I'm grateful that other people are out there are telling what they have seen, too, so I could be open about my experience. He says, because if it was just me, some people might think that I was losing my mind. Now, in case you're wondering, Wells is a small city in the northeast of Nevada. It's located between Interstate 80 and U.S. Route 93 and has a population of 1,300 people. Now, you know, I'm not saying the guy didn't see this, but could he have been mistaken? I mean, could it have been some kids playing around? Could he have been driving for too long? I mean, he mentioned that all this started when being chased by the light was 2 a.m. He pulls over after thinking a UFO chased him and decides to go to a casino to use the restroom.
Well, why not?
I guess. I mean, not saying it's not real.
Right? I mean, I've driven for a long time. I've never seen that, but I'm not saying that it's not there. I would love to see that. Wouldn't you like to pull over and be like, what the hell is that underneath those street lights?
I'd go down there and dance with them. Right? I'd have like a dance off.
Oh, yeah, throwing it to you. Yeah.
Right?
That'd be awesome. Well, Kyle, what have we got going on
Today we're going to be doing some more cryptozoology, and we've been exploring different parts of the world, so we're going to do some crypto stories from New Zealand.
Right.
Very exciting. Let's get into it. We're taking a break now. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at Kosai.org.
Okay, guys, you know, on the last couple shows, we've been visiting different parts of the world, different parts of the globe, and talking about some of the cryptid animals that live in those regions. So again today, we're going to explore a new region, a new corner of the Earth that's not too far away from where we did the Orang Pendek and the Yowies and stuff. We're going to be talking about New Zealand.
Yes.
Right? A lot with New Zealand and also the Philippines. And you found some interesting things when it comes to New Zealand that I was totally not aware of.
Mm-hmm.
But it makes sense. I mean, we know that speaking with Warren Dara and Chris Copeland that, you know, several times they've brought new animals, these exotic creatures,
yes,
to Australia, New Zealand, Tasmania, to try to see if they can get the species to grow. And you know, it didn't work very well in most cases. It seems like that seems to be a same thing that's going on in New Zealand, mm-hmm, or it has, yeah, happened.
It has happened.
Where several decades ago, they introduced some new animals, and then for whatever reason, they didn't take off.
Yeah.
But then there's still sightings of these things, apparently.
Yeah, well, and it gives new hope. As far as to me, because I didn't know anything about this. It's one of those things, we think of cryptid animals. When you bring up the word cryptid, most everybody instantly goes, oh, hell, you know, it's Bigfoot. That's the first thing that you think of when you think of a cryptid.
Or made up, or, you know.
Well, or it's like a thunderbird, or it's a pterodactyl, it's something. You're right. And it's something that's not real, you know. This isn't a real, because, you know, it's like an unknown species. But what's even funnier is whenever they bring something in, like you're talking about, and they introduce it, and then it dies off, but then there's still these accounts of people seeing it years and years later, much like the thylacine, these accounts that Waz and those guys are looking to do, and we're going to talk about more of that on the closing of the show. But basically, I didn't know a lot of this stuff went down, and me and Calvin sitting there talking about it, and we were kind of blown away before we get into these really crazy stories of these hairy men that they've seen in New Zealand. For those of you that don't know, they were trying to introduce Canadian moose into New Zealand in the early 1900s.
Yeah, I had no idea.
Me either. I mean, we're talking like in 1900 is when they were going to introduce them. They were trying to do it to help them out with, I believe it was to hunt, along with red deer. So, mm-hmm, they could kind of get a sporting population going where people would come down there to hunt. And I guess, you know, the area they were going to introduce this Canadian moose, I believe it's what they call around an area called Dusky Sound, is a lot like where it came from around Saskatchewan, where they brought these moose from. And, of course, they didn't take off. I mean, a lot of them, I guess the weather wasn't right. Something wasn't right. Anyway, they died off, allegedly. Now, allegedly they died. And there was 14 of them on a ship, and they brought them over. Only four survived the ship in the early, you know, in 1900. And then, apparently, you know, like we talked about,
they were the original amount actually transported to New Zealand was only four.
Four is what they said. I guess that was the initial.
Well, no
that
wonder
was the
it
initial
failed.
Time. Yeah.
You know, you would think it would have to be a lot more than that. 400.
Yeah. Well, exactly. But back then, they didn't know that. You know, yeah, they didn't have any idea. Here's what was crazy. They were talking about they started spotting them, and allegedly there was a bull moose shot, like in 1934 down there in that area. They were sightings that were real prevalent between like 1929 and 1952 of a moose now in New Zealand.
So those four were breeding then?
Well, they were first of all, they were saying no, like we talked about. You're like, no, they weren't. Well, then somebody apparently had found a shed antler in 1972, and you're like, oh, well, what is this? And they said tracks and things.
Well, if you find an antler, what else could, how else could you explain that?
Here's where it gets wild. There was a hair sample that was actually tested in 2000 that was found that confirmed it was moose hair. Then there was another hair sample found in October of 2002. They said that was snagged at waist height on some tree bark it was tested, and it was moose hair.
So then there's, I mean, that's proof.
Well, it's proof because I wouldn't think that even if it was 70 years old, would it still test as moose hair if it had, you know, or 100 years old? Or would the weather degrade it so much that you wouldn't be able to test it? Or is this something, are they out there? Is there a small pocket of them still alive out there?
Sounds like they're out there. I mean, I guess they don't have any photographic traces of it. But you don't really need photographic proof if you can find footprints, if you can find sheds.
Droppings and hair.
And hair, I mean, to me, that
proves I'm sure there's more to it. You know, I'm sure there's some New Zealanders right now that are going crazy. And you guys don't know what you're talking about. I'm sure that's going on because we don't. I mean, we're just really curious. Like, man, that is strange. But it always, when I find little tales like this, it always makes me feel good because I think about these cryptid animals of what we're fixing to talk about. And I think about the thylacine. I think about these things as these are known animals and they're still hiding out there. There may be small groups of them, but they're still hiding. But like you brought up, we were laughing off air about the laughing owl. That's something that New Zealand has. We were talking about this. I'm not even sure how you would pronounce this thing, but basically it's like a giant gecko. And they also have a moa, these stories of these giant birds. And there's always there's a New Zealand panther, and this kawaki is like a giant cat. And they also talk about seeing what looks like an otter. So you're like, I don't know what the heck is going on down there in New Zealand, but it's definitely interesting. You're like, man, I got to check some of these critters out because they were there. I guess a lot of them have been brought in, you know, and things like we talked about. But there's definitely something here that I'm fixing to get into with y'all that I don't know if it was brought in. I don't know how it's like where it comes from. Like Kyle talked about, we're going to do a little poking around in New Zealand. Everybody knows it, has seen any photographs of it. New Zealand's beautiful and a magical place. I mean, it looks untouched, and there's a reason it looks like that, because it was untouched for a long time. Basically, I'm gonna give you a few famous residents. Kyle, Lucy Lawless from New Zealand. Oh, yeah. Xena, the warrior princess.
Yeah.
Russell Crowe.
Yeah.
Carl Urban. You don't remember who Carl Urban is? You'll have to watch the new Star Treks, is what I remember him from. He plays the Doc in the new Star Treks.
Oh, okay.
Manu Bennett, he's from there. Rose MacGyver, Cliff Curtis, Zoe Bell, of course, Keith Urban, the other artist, and then Peter Jackson, the man that directed all the Lord of the Rings. And it's funny because Middle Earth is the area that is kind of what we're going to be talking about here. Auckland is the largest city. Wellington, they say, is the capital. And they say Mount Victoria and the South Island's Fiordland and Southern Lakes is where that Middle Earth is, where he kind of set the Lord of the Rings. Now to let
I've heard that, yeah.
Yeah, now to let this, folks, give you an idea of what we're talking about here. 103,000 square mile place. There's 4.5 million people live there. This is a 2015 of June of this year's estimate.
It's a very small population for such a large island, right?
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Now, I looked up because I wanted to know what they exported because, you know, the conspiracy side of you always wants to know, well, why would they hide something? If they know there's a creature out there, why would they hide it?
Rugby players. Is that their number one export?
All Blacks. The right. All Black rugby jackets.
Got those Maori clubs, right? With the shark teeth embedded into them.
Right. Yeah, and the
shards.
That's
not the number one? That's not the number one export?
Concentrated milk.
What?
Is the number one export. And then it says sheep and goat meat, butter, rough wood, and then frozen bovine meat.
What? We live in Texas. We don't have to buy frozen bovine meat. We got cows everywhere.
That's right. Exactly. So that kind of gives you an idea. Now, they say that New Zealand was one of the last major land masses that were settled by humans, and that radiocarbon dating, evidence of deforestation, and the mitochondrial DNA viability within the Maori populations suggest that New Zealand was first settled by Eastern Polynesians between 1250 and 1300 during like long series of voyages along the Southern Pacific Islands.
They're known as Kiwis, right?
Yes, exactly. That's kind of what they're known as. Now, like we were talking about, there's the animals of New Zealand is kind of an interesting history because before the arrival of humans, which is less than 900 years ago, the country was completely free of mammals except those that could swim.
Really?
So anything, if a mammal could swim there, seals, sea lions, maybe whales, something like that, and even bats. But that was the only mammals. That's why there's flightless birds, things like that. There was really nothing to prey on them there. Now, what we're going to be talking about today, though, is a large, hairy, bipedal mammal.
Yeah, once again, this part of the world seems to have its own version.
Exactly.
Of a, you know, what else are we going to call it?
A Bigfoot, a Sasquatch, a hominid, a hairy hominid.
A hairy hominid, yeah.
A hairy hominid.
I mean, it seems like these things are everywhere. How can you never hear about the other ones, though? I mean, unless you do some real digging, they never seem to bring them up.
And they may over there.
I'm sure they do, but I'm talking about like normal, you know, the normal vernacular of the normal person on the street. If you were to approach somebody, of course, everybody knows what Bigfoot is, from a child to an old person.
Mm-hmm.
But if you were to ask them, you know what a urine is? They'd say, what?
Mm-hmm.
You know, do you know what
a yowie is?
A yowie is. They'd be like, what?
And maybe it's getting to be more where they would know it. Because it's going to be where, like, even the Finding Bigfoot crew has gone and done a little stuff over there, something like that. But
how many seasons are they going to do that show? Can they please quit calling it Finding Bigfoot? They haven't found anything.
How about just searching for, looking for, scaring off Bigfoot, something like that? I hope I pronounce this properly. Mohau, M-O-E-H-A-U, but I'm going to call it Mohau. And this is what it's reported. It's reported to be a large, hairy hominid. And what they say is the Coromandel Mohau Range of New Zealand's North Island.
Okay.
Now, before we go, you know, we like to kind of give a little backstories to this. Now, it was in 1970, there was a county councilor named Jay Reddy, and he told author Robin Gossett that the hairy Mohau was an exaggeration started simply from a joke. That it wasn't real. It was just a story, okay?
Okay.
Also in 1970, Bob Gray, a fellow there, told Robin that the term Mohau monster came from the name given to a Yankee steam hauler that was used for logging in that area.
Okay.
Now, there's a book, New Zealand Mysteries, by Nicola McCloy, and this author says, no, that there were several sightings during the early 19th century. So that it's like, this can't be real. This is talked about before all these things you're claiming is why it was named that.
You know, and like earlier you had brought up that they had tried to get a population of moose in the area.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, I guess most people, for me, I don't think of New Zealand of this that kind of Sasquatchy-looking territory.
Mm-hmm.
But it really is. I mean, it's much like the Pacific Northwest.
Up around Canada,
I mean,
exactly.
Yeah, if you can think of, like you said, the filming of the Lord of the Rings movies. I mean, it does seem to be a very squatchy area.
It does, yeah.
You know?
That's what I picture now. I didn't before, like you said.
Yeah.
But then you think back to some of the shots from the Lord of the Rings, you're like, ooh, that kind of would, you would
think
that.
And you think about how underpopulated the whole island is. I mean, to me, and they had mentioned a large logging industry.
Mm-hmm.
Once again, are there cases of this? And then the logging, you know, companies down there just don't want to bring it up.
I touch on that.
Okay.
But it's a little different now. Now, some of the sightings that come from that Coromandel, they said may have come from an escaped gorilla. Now, they say this is what comes from 1924, that there was a ship that was anchored there in Wao Aro. And it had a pet gorilla as a mascot, and that this and a mascot, he was drunk on mascot, that this animal, this gorilla slipped off the ship and just was never captured and was gone. So whoever was watching the gorilla did a piss poor job at that, and the gorilla got away. And they believe that some of these sightings, they were like, oh, well, that's what it came from. And they were actually some reports of seeing a gorilla. But people that also talk about that don't bring up the fact that it's a gorilla when they talk about this Mohau sighting. Like I said, that being said, I was able to find one early sighting from that early, okay, from the early 19th century they talk about. And I did come across some accounts that seemed to be more than a joke or a boat name.
Right.
You know, that you're like, I don't think they're messing around with that, but I'm going to bring this up. The dismissing of these early reports due to the belief of the local native tribes. Okay.
Uh-huh.
I want to know this. Did they dismiss them because, like we've talked about, they're reporting these accounts and these findings were thought to be, and I'm throwing this out there, were they thinking that the locals and the natives that did it were uneducated, are primitive people?
I'm assuming.
And that's the reason that they don't want to take it.
Everywhere they assume that, right?
Exactly. I don't know if that's why, but I'm thinking maybe it is. Or, like you brought up, was it a cover-up of an unknown creature? Okay.
Right.
That the government was worried about maybe dampening the ability to buy and control more lands for these dairy and sheep farms that they have down there. You know, maybe it's the logging, but we know the dairy and sheep farms, and, you know, they didn't want this to be out there because it would be land that they couldn't use. So we're going to jump into this. Now, in most cases, the main evidence of any of these creatures is simply what? Footprints.
Yep.
Well, in 1903, there were some footprints larger than a man's found in the Karakangak Gorge. There's no way that is properly pronounced. In Coromandel.
Good and enough. That was enough.
That was in 1903. Now, in 1971, there was a trail of footprints very similar to that of a man's in appearance, only a little larger, was located on snow-covered ground that led into a zone of very thick brush on the hillside by a park ranger. So he came across these tracks and was like, what the heck is this?
And there's no known bears to live in New Zealand, right? So there's, you know what I'm saying?
No mammals,
there's nothing they can confuse.
No mammals, lest they swam.
Right. So what could, I mean, I know that they say even in the snow that sometimes as it thaws, it can distort the size.
Well, and it's the double step where the bear's front paw goes down, the back pair goes down, it makes it look bigger.
Well, that's why I was asking about the bears, but there's no reported bears living there either. So.
Well, and they say that they're manlike. So undoubtedly, I'm thinking that they've got a curve. You can see where the heel goes. You know, it looks more like that.
Much less likely than here in the States or somewhere else.
Yes.
You would see, you know, large footprints. So that's what my point was.
Yeah.
Is there's what else could be making?
What else could be confusing him before it? Yeah. I got you. Yeah. Well, in 1983, there was a deer hunter, and he came upon what he called manlike footprints. He said that couldn't have been more than an hour old along a riverbank in the Heffy River area there. Now, in 1991, there was a group of campers, and you're going to like this, in the Cameron Mountains there on the south of the South Island. Now, get a load of this. They elected at the time to abandon their camp completely after finding what they said was unusual large man-beast prints near where they were camping.
Whoa.
So I guess they set it up, went to walking around,
yeah,
maybe picking up firewood, doing their thing, come across these tracks, and like, what the hell is that? Gather your stuff. I'm out.
I don't blame them. It would be terrifying if you're out camping. Just picture on your own. You're out there and you're collecting tinder and firewood, and all of a sudden you see these giant footprints. I mean, what would you think? My first thing is somebody's horsing around.
Well, that would be my first thing. But also, too, you got to think about what stories you may have heard as you were younger growing up. Some of these stories.
Mm-hmm.
Some of these stories. Here's one from 1970. There was a party of campers go out, set up all their stuff, right? Get everything set up. They're going to have a good evening. Got their little fire going. They're all chilling. They straight up abandoned everything and took off because they said there was a 2-meter-tall man beast started screaming from the shadows and throwing rocks of all sizes towards them and their camp. Awful aggressive. It's almost territorial in that fact, like we're talking about with a primate territorial. Now, in 72, there was a hunter in the Coromandel Range, and he claimed that he watched a naked hairy man beast about 2 meters tall. He said, watched it work its way through some scrub brush on the other side of a gully. And then, of course, upon investigating where he last saw the creature, he found the trail of man-like footprints that led into some real thick undergrowth that, you know, and of course he didn't pursue it. But so he watched this thing move and it went to the trail, and there's these footprints that look like a very man-like.
Wow. How do you explain that?
When you start seeing things like this, and they said, you know, he had long enough, they said it was manlike and it was 2 meters tall. So you're like, okay, it's roughly man-sized. Yeah. It's not a gorilla. Gorilla's not man-sized. I mean, my size, but I mean, I'm not a big dude. So, I mean, you're talking about things along that. Now, there was an undated sighting from a local New Zealand newspaper stated that there was an occupier there of a lake, Manchupupa. I don't know, but it was a pub there. And anyway, this person at the pub had claimed that his vegetable garden was being raided and that he had actually seen this man beast dashing around in the evenings with an armload of silver beets out of this garden.
It's so a vegetarian.
Guess, well, it, you know, eats whatever, found a garden, found someplace it could get food, slipped up in there. And
gorillas are vegetarians.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's true. Well, yeah.
Well, and I...
Because they've never had a cheeseburger.
And of course... Well, and like you mentioned, the mascot that was on that boat that fell off overboard or whatever.
Or just escaped, decided to hell with it.
You know, according to Google, gorillas cannot swim.
Really?
That's what they say.
So maybe it had to be docked? It was going to have to be really...
Who knows?
Now, we know chimpanzees can swim, but gorillas cannot.
It says
they're too big.
I don't know. It says
they got little bitty legs. They can't really kick.
They avoid large bodies of water.
I do, too.
Yeah, that's true.
That's true. So even more less like that. All right. Now, like we discussed earlier, folks, the rock throwing report. Now, these creatures are believed to be more aggressive than what we normally think of when we think of Bigfoot.
Mm.
Which, if you think about it, is really not that strange. Because some dogs, you know, they like to be loved on, like to be petted on. They're like lap dogs. And then you look on the other spectrum, and we've got wolves.
Right.
You know what I mean? So
they're back in California now.
Just because one animal likes it doesn't mean they all will. Just because Bigfoot may seem to like certain things or Sasquatch may seem to be friendly don't mean they're all friendly. You know, just because there's a Care Bear don't mean you want to go up and pet a grizzly bear. That's not how these things work. So that said, this is the one 19th century account that I could find where it was believed that these creatures that we're talking about were responsible for the finding of a headless, partially devoured body of a prospector in the Martha Mine region in 1882. And later, and further up the hills, they found the corpse of a woman, and it was discovered that she had been dragged from a shack in which she lived with the remainder of her family, and that her neck had been broken. So something had come and got her and dragged her away. Now, that saying, look, partially devoured, if there was truly no mammals that were there before this time and things have been brought in, what ate it? If we're going to play what ate it, what ate this devoured, partially devoured body of a prospector?
Buzzards.
Exactly.
New Zealand buzzards or vultures. I mean, they got to have something like
They've
that.
They've got to have some kind of vulture, I would think.
Mother Nature always has a cleanup crew.
There's going to be some kind of lizards. I mean, even if they're small lizards, maybe there's something coming through to clean them up. You're right. We don't know what it was. Now, you talk about this woman that they found her with her, she'd been dragged off and had her neck broke. Is it these creatures, or is it the fact maybe her and her husband got in a little tiff and he didn't like the way she washed the dishes, or dinner was cold, and back then you're out in the middle of nowhere and, you know, that's it. You just kill her and drag her off. You know, I don't know. I mean, you know what I'm saying?
Anything's possible.
There's a lot of conjecture with that whole deal. Yeah, you think about it. You're like, are we really going to lay this blame on there? It's even brought up, too, that a lot of these accounts were due to keep people away from mining areas where you had staked your claim and you start saying these stories are out there for these key people so people don't slip up on private property and want to try to bump you off because they're afraid there might be some kind of creature.
Could a large cat live there?
Well, they've talked about it. They've talked about that cat there in New Zealand. So, I mean, I don't know. Now, what we were talking about, this aggressive behavior of the Mohau, are they actually also have the thing called Tongunas? And they said that they were greatly feared by a population of tribespeople there in the lower Whanganui River. So, but
I like how you always ask me.
Yeah,
as
I'm
if
like,
I
man,
know.
I, yeah, I'm hoping you do. I'm no, hoping you do. No. I'm putting it out there for anybody. But these people actually said that if fishermen strayed too far into their territories while they were fishing, that these creatures would attack them.
Oh, they don't like them taking their fish.
No. But what's wild is these attacks have vanished in all the more modern accounts. Of anything where people have ever run into them, they've never had these attacks. Now, it seems more like we would, like I said, we would think of Bigfoot sightings now, as that the creature at the first sight of humans just takes off. When they see them, they just run. Now, the Maori believed that these creatures were able to crush their strongest warriors and kill them with their bare hands.
That's so saying a lot, because the Maoris were tough.
That's what I said. I said, because Maori, these are very proud, strong people. And fierce warriors, and then they're thinking these things could mess them up. So that says a lot in and of itself. Now, here's I found something strange. These creatures are also said to be tool producing, making things out of wood and stone. And they said that these, I guess people have found them, but they believe it looks a lot like what the early hominids would build. So I don't know how you could relate that to, unless it looked fresh, unless there was, you know, something else to it as far as, maybe they found them and somebody was just messing around, or maybe they found old ones and were like, oh, well, this.
I like the idea of making primitive tools, though. That's pretty crazy.
That's pretty neat, yeah.
So, I mean, you're telling me the Maori people, even with their, what is that dance they do, the haka?
The haka.
That wouldn't even frighten these things?
Nah, they don't care. Yeah, these big creatures in the Maori are like, I ain't messing with them. Messing with them and all. Now, here's what these things are believed to look like. Like I told you. Tall as a man, completely covered with hair, and marginal ape-like features on the face.
So, George the Animal Steel.
Pretty much, yeah. But that does that not go along with a lot of the Bigfoot sightings? A lot of it looks like that. Now,
yeah, they claim that. I've heard that lots of times.
Here's what's wild. There's a primary difference from this human appearance, and it's because this. These Mohau are believed to have extremely long fingers tipped with sharp talons capable of tearing apart what is considered the toughest prey. So basically, they got big claws.
Big claws.
That's what made them described as manimals. People there described them as manimals. And there's even reports, and I couldn't find, you know, you always hear these things and these things that you find, all these reports and reports. The reports aren't easy to find on these things, but they said that people have seen them with spearing fish with these long fingernails on their fingers, like crouched by the water, and I guess stabbing little fish to eat these
things. That's interesting.
Now, it is possible that if these man beasts existed prehistorically, they would have been capable of bringing down pretty much anything. You got to think about that. Being able to attack anything with these large, you know, talons and being able to attack stuff. But some people have said, well, maybe their talons are used to tear apart old, like rotten logs. The Maori are known to eat these grubs called hoo-hoo grubs. And there's, you know, big, and every, you know, we've seen that a ton of times of people, the natives in these areas eating these grub worms out of these trees, you know,
right.
It's a great source of protein, things like that. Some people have speculated, well, maybe that's what they're doing with those claws. They're not really made to attack and do all this. It's made for tearing into wood and tearing through all that. Now, there's a little bit of a difference here when we start talking about these creatures, too, is there seems to be two different camps of them and a little bit of a two different looks. Now, the Matua, as I go along, the Matua or the Tuarangi and the Rapue are what's considered to be giants, like an ape that's 3 meters tall. That's what they're talking about.
Wow.
So you're talking 10 foot.
Yeah.
A 10-footer.
9 foot at least, yeah.
Now, the Mohau that we bring up, they've also kind of named them a little bit something else, a Mahero. But the Mohau are believed to be of a statue of an ordinary human being. So it's funny that they've got no primates. Now they see these, but there's two different groups of these. Now it gets even stranger.
It's not that strange, though, to me, to think that there's two different groups. I mean, because
species.
I think that even North America, there's multiple groups. We talk about it.
Yes, yeah. But you would think on something like this, at least I would, that they would be one, you know, there's just one group. But there's not. There's not like one species. So when you start adding multiple species, to me, then you have to start adding larger groups or larger numbers of those different species in order to be a viable breeding population.
Yeah.
In order to make it work. So then you would think, well, I should see them more. I should come across bodies. I should come across something if there's going to be multiple species. Where if it's one species that interbreeding and all that, you might be able to keep a smaller group. Maybe not. There's even some have said that they've heard of stories of people finding caves full of very strange skeletons. And there's even locals in these areas of these mountains that claim that they have seen it, and that there's in one of these caves they found skeletons of small men with red hair, and another cave with giant skeletons over 7 foot tall. There's your giants again.
The giants with the red hair, even the small people with the red hair, the sounds small, like the Orang Pendek.
It does, right? It's strange.
What is that?
Now I'm going to read you something here from the Taranaki Daily News, February 5th, 1952, and this is actually what it said. This was the heading: "Strange hairy creature reported on the East Coast, believed by some to be a gorilla." And it reads, "Persistent reports from Coromandel Peninsula say that a strange hairy creature thought by some to be a gorilla lurks at the back of the Waru in the wild bush country of the Mohau Range. When Dr. Roy Norman and Mr. Douglas Tawana of North Auckland were pig hunting in the area, they said they caught a fleeting glimpse of a hairy man, or possibly a gorilla, running along a brush track. Mr. F.W. Winslick of Amado Bay said tonight that about 30 years ago, a ship was lying off Waru, which had a young gorilla as a mascot. The animal left the ship and got ashore. Since then, there have been repeated rumors of strange occurrences in the hills. Stories deal with night intrusions into camps, dogs bristling and snarling because of a strange presence, and a mysterious footfall in the bush. A hunter, Mr. H. Beasley, has found a cave with evidence of a man or beast living under primitive conditions, which contained bones of animals presumably eaten raw and collections of shells. It was possible, but highly improbable, that the strange hairy being, believed to be lurking in the Mohau Ranges, was a gorilla, or in fact any species of the ape family. The director, R.W. Roach, of the Auckland Zoo, said that tonight, if the strange creature did exist, it was more probable a member of the baboon family. He would regard the story as more feasible if someone had discovered footmarks or nests in the treetops, very much larger than that made by any known bird. Mr. Roach completely discounted any suggestions that the cave that had been discovered by Beasley was likely to have been the home of a creature. All members of the monkey family lived in nests built in the treetops, although they spent most of their time on the ground, he said. Now, that being said, Kyle, there was a little anecdote to this. The Winslick boys, they say there, were of the Thames Coast, and I'm sure it's going to be Thames Coast, but I'm still calling it Thames. They said they were known as great storytellers in the local bar in that area. So people really didn't know how to go about believing
right.
some of this stuff. Now, like I told you before, at the time of a lot of this was going on, There was a lot of gold prospectors in that area. So the idea of the sighting of this primitive man beast was probably something that could have been used to say, don't go up there, there's a man beast. Also, too, and I wasn't aware of this, but there was a lot of illegal liquor distilleries up in that area. A lot of moonshine making going on up in those mountains, too. That could have been something, too, that they helped spread this, don't say that, don't say this. It's funny that you brought up the fact that a gorilla couldn't swim. Also, a gorilla is not going to be carnivorous.
But dragon just because it just got onto shore does not mean that it swam. So, I mean.
Exactly. You know, but it also doesn't mean it's eating meat in a cave.
They don't eat meat.
A baboon would.
A baboon would.
Yes.
Or a mohawk or whatever. Yeah. It has nothing to do with the gorilla.
It has nothing to do with it. Now, there was an article in a local New Zealand paper that told about a proposed Australian expedition to find this, what they were calling, like we said, the mohawk monster. Tour leader J.P. Gray, managing director of a large wholesale business, collected together a 40-person team to search for this monster. And like I said, the monster he's looking for, though, is a little different. It was described as a 7-foot-tall creature covered with silver-white hair and large pink eyes. And they say its body was very ape-like with long dangling arms and short thin legs. They said its growl could be heard over a long distance. Well, when you describe that, that goes into thinking about these real skinny apes that people report seeing with the Sasquatch, the drawn down. The funny thing to me is the pink eyes, the large pink eyes and silver white hair. That's a little strange because most of the time you think of a brown or a black, not a silver white. Now, J.P. Gray actually quoted a Miss Vera Marshall of Sydney, and she had claimed that she had come face to face with the monster on a bush track when she and her husband were on holiday in New Zealand at the beginning of October of 69. She describes this creature as gorilla-like, and it took off into the bush when it saw him. And she added to the theory that the monster was a gorilla that escaped, of course, from this ship, because to her it looked very gorilla-like. But that's 60 years after.
Yeah, exactly. I was just going to say that. There's no way because it was probably a mature gorilla at the time that it disappeared off that ship. You're telling me that a whole 60 years later, the thing's still running around? I don't think gorillas live that long.
Well, my deal was always this, too. How would you keep a gorilla as a mascot? We all know how big and powerful they are. I've seen baboons kept as mascots in photographs of these African hunting villages and things where these baboons look like they're driving a Jeep and they got a hat on and all that. I've never seen somebody walking around with a mountain gorilla. We also have to take into consideration when a mountain gorilla was discovered.
Yeah, well, according to Google, gorilla's average age is 35 to 40 years old.
Okay. Now, we've talked even in the past about when gorillas were even discovered.
Yeah, that's correct. They were not even discovered until 1902.
Okay, so even that you're talking about, so they discovered this gorilla, then somebody made it a mascot and took it with them?
Yeah, before anybody knew 20-something years after they discovered
it. Yeah, before anybody knew anything about it. I'm not saying it didn't happen.
I'm not saying it didn't happen. I guess it's possible.
Oh, yeah, it's completely possible, but it just doesn't seem to be jiving. You know what I mean? It just doesn't seem to be adding up on this. Exactly.
It's like a tall tale, especially if the two guys that are in this bar or in this town that are known for telling these wild stories. I mean, is that where it came from?
Exactly. So, but there's enough sightings and tracks and stuff that people are like, man, I don't know what this is. Now, there's also a part where, like we talked about, the little red-haired men, and that goes back into some fairy folk tales with the Maori, and they actually have these people named, and it's Turahu. There's some strange names, and it basically means fair-skinned with red hair. So they actually know. So
they in their folklore have
in the Maori
tales.
They talk about little red-headed, fair-skinned fairy people.
Man, that's cool.
Isn't that wild?
Yeah.
But it doesn't mean that's what they found in these caves.
No,
you know,
right.
It doesn't mean. It sure is. It's convenient that those start lining up to kind of, you know, give it a little
bit
more
credence.
Well, you're
100% right. The cave where they found all these bones. I mean, yeah. It'd be interesting. I'm like, well, could you be more descriptive? Are they human being? Are they human bones? I mean, what are they bones
exactly,
of? You know?
Exactly.
Again, it's a nice story, but there's nothing really to back it up.
Well, and we've even talked about in the past about Mr. Rex Gilroy.
Oh, yeah. He's an Australian cryptozoologist. Yeah.
And, yeah, he considers himself a Yowie expert and all that. Well, he traveled to New Zealand in 2001 because he was intrigued about all this. So he actually got into it. And this was part of his ongoing, what he called was his Operation Yowie project. And he was looking for physical evidence on relic hominids. So I'm sure, you know, you're right there close. Well, the story goes that him and his wife found three what he said was fossil hominid footprints in the Karen Cake or Karen Hockey Gorge, And there was enough information in that area, he said, that convinced him that there was indeed something to the Mohau Man stories.
Well, yeah. He's really cool. I mean, he's like the Australian Lauren Coleman.
Yes, yes.
He's a big-time cryptozoologist. Have you ever seen the plaster castings he's made of this supposed tracks? They look pretty cool, along with the T-Rex track I got.
He's got some crazy stuff, yeah.
I mean, he's a big Yowie guy,
A big Yowie guy, yeah. Now, here's what's pretty cool. There was a part he was in a remote forest track of this Urewera National Park on the east coast of the North Island. They discovered what was said a number of faded tracks in a patch of soil there that led a few yards away to discover that they were two clearly visible and worth casting. And those are the ones that you see. Now, the left and the right foot impressions measured 29.5 centimeters in length and 13 centimeters in width across the toes, 10 centimeters width at midfoot and 7.5 at the heel, making what they said the owner of this track 5'6" in height.
Okay.
So a small, stocky dude running around out there in the woods. So look, could it be a local native? Could it be something along that lines? I think it could be. I very possibly think it could be. Or could it be that it is a relic hominid? It is something that's been there that these people, they weren't able to categorize, because even when the very first people came there, they couldn't categorize it. It was there and it watched them land. It did all this stuff and it wasn't going to be found then. Just because it wasn't categorized does not mean it wasn't there. That's the thing,
right?
I guess I want to say the most is, just because people said, well, there was no mammals on there, there were no mammals that you found. Maybe there's been no mammals. Okay, look, I can understand the argument, too. If they found zero remains, zero fossilized remains of any animal on this island ever, unless they swam there. I get that. We all know how much lower the oceans were, how much bigger that land area could have been. Maybe there was a small group that survived on that island and whatnot. Maybe they just haven't stumbled across these fossilized remains, if there is any of them. Maybe, let me throw this out there, maybe that's not how they take care of their dead. Maybe when these things die, they throw them in the ocean.
Yeah, maybe, right?
You know, who knows? Maybe they devour them. Maybe they, you know, maybe they do bury them. Maybe they pull them to pieces. We don't know. There's a lot of what ifs that go into that. You could argue it either way. You could argue that there's, like we've said about the Yowie, that there's no way this is possible. This doesn't exist. It's not physically possible. You know, it's not scientifically, it's impossible, but we don't know everything. Science isn't always right. We don't know everything like we like to believe. So there's always a little bit of that what if. And I think that's what makes it so fun, is listening to these tales of stuff that people have found and seen. I couldn't find any really crazy, I saw it run up to my car, I saw it this, I saw it that. Right. It all seems to be in a certain area, kind of like the Yeti is in a certain area. You never hear about the Yeti in other parts of Tibet. You hear it in this one area. That's kind of the way it seems.
But the Maori themselves speak about it.
Yes.
So, again, you know, we've brought it up before on the show. I mean, a lot of these times when these people start coming to the area, I'm talking about outsiders, and they wonder why the indigenous people of that area don't ever bring it up. It'd be like, because it's totally normal to them. They would never think to bring it up.
Yes.
It's not like Bigfoot is a big deal like it is now. I mean, if you grew up and you knew about an armadillo, would you feel the compelling need, as soon as some strangers from, you know, Ohio,
to tell them about
it? You want to tell them about them, maybe show them one? It doesn't occur to you, because you don't know that those aren't normal for everywhere.
You're 100% right.
And then when you go to the ancient traditions and this, and the people from long ago, native to the area, speak about it, like you talk about it. They do the haka, it doesn't scare them off.
Yeah.
And they battled these things, you know, and they were much stronger than them. Maybe it's real. Why do we always discredit what the natives to an area?
Why do we always think that we're so much smarter than them? They're so much primitive, and just because they're primitive, it means they're not smart or they're uneducated.
So it's the nature.
Yeah, there's cases. There's cases that there is very primitive people that aren't smart and they're uneducated. Yeah, I agree with that. I completely agree with that. But that doesn't mean that they don't know what's around them. They're not walking around staring at the sun with their mouth open catching flies. That's not how this works. Mm. Just because it, you know, education doesn't always mean that you're smart. Mm. It means you're educated.
Yeah, very interesting. I love these stories. I've never really even heard of it. So I'm once again blown away. Good job. Let's take a break, folks. You're listening to Expanded Perspectives.
Wow. One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to COSI. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to COSI starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at COSI.org.
All right, folks. Hope you enjoyed that. I had a great time discussing it. It's something new. It's something different. It was, I don't know, man. I like to think about that stuff and, I don't know, expand my perspective. I don't know.
It's always interesting to learn about new cryptids in different parts of the world.
Speaking of that, in that area, well, we're going to be sticking to the theme of the Down Under. Now, look, I know they give each other a hard time. The New Zealanders and the Australians, you know, they give each other a hard time. We've got some Australians that are like family to us, good brothers down there, and we've had them on the show a few times. They've got a new show coming out, folks. Waz and Chris and Bill down there with the Thylacine Research Unit. For everybody in the UK, this is for all you UK listeners, for everybody in the UK, keep your eyes open on Discovery and the Animal Planet down there, September 6th. They're going to be airing their episode of their new show, The Hunt for the Tasmanian Tiger.
Yeah, right. I wish I could see it.
Well, this is what it is, folks. If everybody that's listening in the UK right now, if y'all watch that and it gets some good numbers and the whole thing. Now, the rest of Europe will end up receiving it on the in October sometime is when it'll come out. But it's going to be aired there in the UK. Let's make a big push. Let's get it, because as soon as y'all back it up and it gets some good numbers, we get to see it. So basically, I'm asking a big favor because I want to see it. So the more that watch it there, it'll be better for everybody. It'll get everything going because I'm curious about it, because I am, you know, we talk to them off air lots and we discuss stuff with them back and forth, even, you know, has nothing related with the show, just discussing things. But I'm really excited because this is one of those things, like we've said before, and we've had them on the show, I could really get behind. So, folks, you can go to the TRU's Facebook page. Yeah, they have a podcast on YouTube. I mean, you can go listen to a bunch of this stuff and check it all out and kind of familiarize yourself with it. And those guys are a whole lot of fun. And also sticking along that little line of talk, there's another fella down there listening in Queensland, Mr. Luke Nowland, down here at the golf course. Now, he needs to stay out of trouble. Troublemaker down there on the golf course. Every time I think of that, I think of him down there. He's going to be like Carl on Caddyshack. So, yeah. Luke, Cinderella story out of nowhere. You stay out of trouble down there. Don't Please. Let Waz give you too much of a problem. We are having technical difficulties because I'm an idiot. So if anything sounds wacky, it's me doing it because I'm overriding Kyle and making him tune things in and out of it because my hearing's going. So everything other than that's going great. Kyle.
Yes, sir.
You said you may have something funny for us.
Oh, no, it's nothing funny. It's something very serious. Did you see where David Politis has released his new book?
Oh,
Missing 411.
Really?
A sobering coincidence. This just came out. I just ordered our copies. They should be here this week. Very interesting.
It's called A Sobering Coincidence.
A Sobering Coincidence. Now, this is his fifth book in this acclaimed series, and this new book has 127 new cases in it. 62 different colleges and universities are represented.
Of missing people, like in a city. Is that what this is?
I don't know what it is. It's just, I haven't.
If it's college universities, it's got to be along those lines, right?
Well, they're represented is all it says.
Hmm.
So I'm wondering. It says that it spans from the 1928 to 2015. And it's from different countries. I mean, it's from United States, Canada, France, Spain, and even the UK. So I can't wait to get it. If you haven't read any of his other books, I suggest each and every one of those, the Western United States, the Eastern United States, North America and beyond. And, of course, the other one we just got not too long ago, The Devil's in the Details.
Yes.
Excellent books, all of them. Very shocking, very interesting. Along with the Missing 411, I'd like to bring up several of our listeners have sent us this Reddit link.
Yes, thank you to everybody. We've gotten bombarded by that by several people.
Right. Now, the search and rescue team leader that's been writing his stories on Reddit about the staircases and stuff in the woods that are appearing. You know, very interesting. I will say that I don't necessarily know that it's real. I know that even David Politis himself had said that he's not saying it's not real either. He said he would love to talk to the guy, interview him, and try to vet some of his claims.
Yes.
But from what I've seen so far, I don't necessarily believe it's real, but it may be.
They are
very interesting either way, very creepy either way. I'll put links to it in the show notes, but I just wanted to thank everybody for bringing that up.
Oh.
We appreciate stuff like that. I mean, that's what...
I love it.
I love it too, yeah.
But you're right. 100% is, look, and everybody, yeah, thank you so much for sending us those. And we get links from everybody.
Yeah.
You know, and Matthew and all those guys that send us stuff. Thank you all so much for sending us those links and gives us stuff to look into. We got great emails from you guys. I'm with you. I've read it, and it's almost, I know this is silly, but it's almost like it's too perfect. You know, it's almost too strange. And like I told you, that there's a story that comes from there where they talk about finding a staircase in the woods, ways, and it's, and people acted like, oh, let's, you know, don't go near that and all this, that, and the other. And I told you that was the first thing that was like a red flag to me, you know.
Creepy, but I don't think that it's real, right? I mean, yeah. That's the thing. Look, I'm not going to pass judgment. It's too early. This just came out. This guy just started writing this stuff. I'm sure in the next couple of weeks we'll know more. But anyways, there'll be links to it in the show notes. You can go over there and check that out. Yeah.
Katie also sent it to us. Katie from Austin, thank you so much for firing that off.
She was the first person.
Yeah.
She was number one. After that, we got about 12 more people that sent it to us. Also, on the David Politis, I just want to mention, please don't go on Amazon or anywhere else to buy his books for some odd reason. They're always like super overpriced. Just go to his website, canammissing.com. I'll put links to it there. And you go over there, I mean, you can buy the book. It's like $24.
And folks, he is coming on. He's just been busy. Been busy working on all that stuff with the movie, the whole thing. We are going to get him on. We're just, you know, we're not sure when. We're just working back and forth to make sure all of it works out. So
yeah, awesome, man.
It's been great. It's been fun.
It has been really cool. I love everything that all the news stories that people sent us. Please keep that up. If you have any interesting experiences that you'd like to share, any show ideas, any guest ideas, you can email the show expandedperspectives@yahoo.com. Cam, is there anything else that we need to bring up?
We're going to be going, like we said, we talked about it to the Paradigm. So get ready. If anybody's coming up there, we want to be able to hang out with everybody there. And we are closing in on our 2-year anniversary.
Are we really?
We're gaining on that whole thing. So yeah, in the next couple of weeks, folks, we'll be celebrating 2 years on this show. So yeah, that's pretty crazy, right?
Man, I can't believe it's gone by that fast, right?
It's like a marriage. Look.
Yeah.
You're going to have to give me a hug after this.
Yeah, I will. No problem. I love hugs. You like hugs?
I love hugs.
Who doesn't like hugs?
You don't like hugs. Yeah. Speaking of that, go give somebody a hug, folks.
Absolutely.
Go give somebody a hug. Buy somebody something nice and cold to drink. Unless you're down there where it's cold, buy somebody something nice and warm to drink.
That's right. That's right. Don't forget, if you like Expanded Perspectives, you can always go on iTunes, write us a nice review. Thank you to everyone that's done that already. And also, if you want more Expanded Perspectives, don't forget, we do a Thursday show, Elite Show, Expanded Perspectives Elite. You can go to the website, expandedperspectives.com. Click the tab in the top right button. Signing up is easy. $5 a month, $55 a year, and you'll get an extra show. It's just like this one.
Yep.
It's not any different. It's another hour of me and Cam bringing up interesting topics. Yeah, in the last couple of weeks, we've done episodes on spontaneous human combustion, the Maori Island incident, more haunted highways, you know, more black-eyed kids stories, the mysterious death of Zygmunt Adamski. Some camping stories, haunted plantations of the South. You get the idea.
Yeah.
It's just like the show, but just a continuation of the show. So if you like that, go over there and sign up. Cam, you got anything else?
One more thing before we wrap this thing up. I want to say congratulations to a great listener and a good friend of ours, Miss Janet Walker.
Congratulations.
Miss Homesick Honey got married. So congrats to you. I'm not even sure of your maiden name or your new married name or what Joe's got going on. But anyway, so congratulations, girl. Stay out of trouble. That girl had some fun on you look at the pictures on the cruise ship that she went on. I bet that cruise ship was like, we're going to have to put her in lockup. Folks, thank you so much for joining us here today.
Absolutely.
We had a wonderful time. We love all y'all. Take care. For all you elite listeners, we'll talk to y'all this coming Thursday. We're probably going to go down the cryptid spiral staircase a little bit deeper again on that and have some more fun. But for everybody else, y'all have an awesome work week. Try to stay safe. Make sure the kids are back in the grind for school. We'll see y'all. Have a good weekend, and we will talk to y'all again on Monday.
That's right. I'm Kyle Filson. He's Cam Hale. Thanks again to Derek Smith of Pretty Lights for providing the music, Inner Traditions, New Page Books. You know who you are. Have a good week, everybody.
One of the largest Star Wars fan collections in the world is coming to Kosai. Unofficial Galaxies opens on May 10th, and this is a one-of-a-kind exhibition with iconic characters, props, legendary ships, costumes, and behind-the-scenes secrets. It's going to be a must-see whether you're a hardcore Star Wars fan or just curious about one of the most famous sci-fi franchises of all time. Unofficial Galaxies is coming to Kosai starting on May 10th, so get your tickets now at kosai.org.